Play the Game with Larry Leathers and Kyle Mankey. That's us. He's Larry Leathers. I'm Kyle Mankey. We are back after a little hiatus, a little sickness that took us out for a while there, and we're almost through with. Right, Larry? How you feeling tonight?
I'm not almost through it. I'm still in the thick of it, and I'm toughing it out tonight. I thought I was better. Sunday, I felt great, and the coughing had stopped for the most part, and then Tuesday it came back with a vengeance. I ended up at the doctor, so not good times. Steroid shots, antibiotics, the whole nine yards.
Party. That's how we roll, I guess, these days. So this is our first live show since the rebrand. The other episode we did kind of behind closed doors while we finished some things and polished some other things. But the plan, I believe, is that we are going to stay going live Thursday nights like we have for several years now. Thursday nights, probably 8 or 9 p.m. more often. Tonight, we're a little late just because, you know, life.
Just tell it like it is. It's my fault. It's my fault. I got all hopped up on the meds they gave me, and I passed out, and I didn't wake up till like 5 till 9.
Larry's drug problem is causing us to be late is basically what we're saying. Now, tonight we're running a little later than normal. Normally it'll be 8 or 9 p.m. We'll let you know Thursday nights. And then we are also going to try and roll out on Monday nights too. See what happens there. So should be lots of fun.
Sure.
We do have San Antonio FC regular season soccer to talk about, which is a nice change of pace. It feels good to be able to say that after a long, long off season. It felt like San Antonio FC opened at home at Toyota Field on a 3-3 draw with Phoenix Rising. What were your initial takeaways from this? Where do you want to start with this? Is I guess how I'll tee it up for you.
I sat there the entire game going, where did this attack come from? Because holy crap, we are an attacking team now. That is first and foremost what we are all about now. And I love it. It makes for an exciting game to watch, even when we end in ties like this. It was a hell of a game, and we probably should have had at least another goal, maybe even two on top of that to seal it off there. Granted, we saw some inconsistencies in the defense, but nothing like what we experienced at the beginning of last year. It seemed like some minor inconveniences that right place, right time for Phoenix, and they just happened to take advantage of it and exploit it.
Yeah, I guess I'll start out off on the positive note, because I agree there were some issues with the defense there. But the attacking squad this year is just so stacked. It really hit me the other day, a couple weeks ago, when I was talking about Jack Barmby and Christian Pirano and typed the sentence. It was something like Manchester United and River Plate products. And it was just like, how do you get to type that in this league? Like, those are such prestigious clubs and such recognized programs that it feels good. Things seem to be off on the right foot with some of these new signings.
Yeah, Christian Pirano really impressed. I wasn't 100% if he was going to end up making the starting lineup or not. He obviously gave a good showing in preseason, and I thought it might be the case. Pleasant surprise seeing him start, and man, is he fast. He's got the jets on out there. And he makes up for some of the big deficiency I see with Billy Forbes, which is the defensive side of play for Billy Forbes. That's always been my gripe about him, you know that. But Pirano is so quick on the field and covers up and makes up some of that ground that Billy's not covering on the defensive side of things. And that certainly helps.
Yeah, and I do want to talk more about Billy here in a little bit, but before we move away from those central midfielders, I just want to say, looking back on the highlights and rewatching the game, there were a couple times where Barmby almost had a goal on his own. He basically forced that own goal. Yep. With his corner kick, but there's just so many ways that this team can beat you, and I guess with that, I'll transition into that Billy Forbes discussion of coming into the season. You and I were both kind of less excited than a lot of people about him returning because we both knew Lance Lang plays on the left side of the formation, and he's been doing it very well for the time that he's been in San Antonio. And that's also where Billy Forbes plays. And so it was kind of like, all right, who is, you know, going to have to play on their less desirable side and who's, you know, going to take up that time, blah, blah, blah. What it seems like, and I wrote about this on calledoffside.com, what it seems like is that Forbes is probably going to play more of a striker role on the attacking side. It feels like he's creeping up there closer to where Ever Guzman is as a second striker at the top of the formation. And you mentioned Christian Pirano, you know, his insane work rate of covering such a big chunk of the field. And he did end up coming out wider than I would have expected. So if you go to calledoffside.com, you can see the average positioning for Forbes and Pirano and the whole squad. And it kind of backs up what we were thinking of preseason and then, you know, what we saw live that night. So I think it's interesting, a little interesting, flexible formation there.
Well, if that's what we're going to play with Billy and we're going to have him play more as a forward and less as a midfielder or a winger, and Pirano's going to fill that spot out on the wing instead and shift that way, I'm okay with that. That my gripes with Billy and not coming back to play on defense start to drift away then, if that's the actual plan here, is playing two up front with him and Ever. I'm happy with it. I'm concerned, though, with Pirano and if he's going to be able to keep it up for the whole season, because that's an awful lot of work on his legs. And I know he's fast, but it's a long season. And I know it's game one, so we saw the best of him right now probably as far as rest-wise. But it's only going to get tougher as the season goes on. So I hope he can keep up with it if we're going to continue to play this style of ball.
Yeah, and we saw him get subbed off in the 85th minute for Michael LaHood. And I'm wondering if that's part of it, is kind of rotating those two, maybe Ethan Bryant when he's back to full health, and maybe some Rafa Castillo even. You know, there's a lot of central midfield on the team that have the talent to play. It's going to be really competitive for that part of the field for San Antonio. The other side of the attack is Lance Lang and Ever Guzman, and they connected again, just like they did at the end of last season. I just don't know how you stop this attack if all of those players stay healthy. Because in 2017, we saw them shut down Billy after about a month, just by covering him more, adjusting for him. But if you do that now, Lang or Guzman or the central midfield, there's just so many ways that this team can beat you on the attack.
It's a dangerous team, that's for sure. And I like it. Like I said before, it's an exciting style of play for us. It's different than what we've seen in the past with the defensive heavy focus. And it's going to make for fun games to watch throughout the season if we keep this up all year long.
So let's talk about that defense a little bit, because obviously as great as it was to see three goals scored for the home side, Phoenix also got their own three in there as well. I'd say one of the goals is, I believe it was the 22nd minute goal or the 43rd minute goal, one of the first two, where it was just a cross into the box and it just landed right on the Phoenix player's foot.
It was the 22nd goal, the cross in from Solomon Asante, which was just absolutely beautiful, and there was really no way to beat that.
Yeah, I have a lot of difficulty finding fault in that. there wasn't too much you could do. That was a beautiful play by Phoenix, and what are you going to do? But the one that bothered me the most was that last one. Ironically enough, Jason Johnson got in the 93rd minute. Mm-hmm. The thing that bothered me the most was it looked like there was a lack of communication in the defensive third, and not even just the back line. It felt like Pekka and the other central midfielders weren't helping the back line as well. So when Cardone was standing on his head and trying to get the back line readjusted, everything else, there just wasn't any help. And I don't know if that was by design, if they were marking the wrong players, not the wrong players, but different players. Unfortunately, it was kind of hard to see in any sort of replays, but what do you think about that defense? Are you worried about it?
That play in particular was pretty chaotic. It's it's growing pains. We've got a new defensive line. Granted, this back four is what we saw throughout the majority of the preseason. They've been pretty consistent, at least in that way, which is something that differs from last season going into it, where we saw a grouping of players in the preseason and then first game of the season rolled around and we were kind of looking at a completely different group. It's going to take time. I'm willing to give it a few games to mesh out and work out. A lot of those guys, I mean, it's a whole new back line and it's their first home game and it's exciting. They've got the adrenaline pumping. So there's going to be a few little mistakes here and there. Granted, I wish it hadn't, you know, turned into three goals, but I can forgive it this time. Like give it a few weeks and let's see how it settles out and we'll go from there. If it's still a mess after, you know, four or five games, then great. We're back to what happened last year. But just even looking at it from game one, it doesn't look like that's the case.
Especially like you said, game one, and of all teams, Phoenix, who is one of the most dangerous attacking teams in the Western Conference, historically. So you don't love giving up three goals to any team, but I would say it's not that shocking to not keep a clean sheet against Phoenix. I would say all of the previous matches have been pretty high scoring from what I remember between these two teams. After the game, right back Kai Green said a little bit about the errors. He said, "We felt we should have won that game, but we had a lot of mental errors that we were punished for, and good teams will do that. Overall, we felt positive. We're going to clean up those mistakes and score two or three goals on opponents, which will turn into wins once we clean up our mistakes in the back." So it seems like we're not too far off on what we're saying compared to what they were saying post-game as far as what went wrong in the back line. But getting a point at home to start the season, how do you feel about that?
I mean, I'll take it. It's against an offensive powerhouse of a team with Phoenix. As long as we're not dropping points, we're making positive progress. It's a great place to start. I'm excited that we have an offense that's electric enough to keep up with the Phoenix attack, because we know that Phoenix attack is strong. It was last year. It clearly is again this year. I'm happy with the result. I wish obviously 3 points would have been better, but to start the season with such a tough matchup and to come away with a point, that's positive in my book at this point.
There's a little disagreement going on in the Periscope chat right now on the Twitter live chat. Royce says Cardoni could have done better on that first goal. He got both hands on the ball, but it was still a solid goal from Phoenix. Max jumped in with, "I think it was so close to his face that it was already on him." And Royce brought up the best point of all is that you're saying it was so close to his beard. Why didn't it get absorbed by the beard? Which I think is a extremely valid question. Looking at the Opta stats, it has all sorts of different stats for right-footed goal, left-footed goal, all these different specific things. I didn't see one for goals saved by beard. So maybe Cardoni will force them to add that this year at some point.
Let's push for it. I say we can campaign the rest of the season to get that added to the stats.
So I saw a Twitter comment earlier, and I'm having trouble finding it now. So I'm very professionally vamping while I look for that. But there it is. It was Max. He said, "I'm happy with positive points to start the season. It seems like some folks had issues with the app-only tickets." And he talked about the Commanders, too. We'll talk about them in a little bit. But did you have any issues with the app-only tickets
that game? As far as the tickets went, I made sure to set them up way ahead of time. So I made sure I got the app loaded, made sure I could access my tickets. My wife and I actually came separately to the game. So I had the app downloaded on both phones and neither of us had problems accessing our tickets to get into the thing. However, for season ticket members that sit under the covered side of the stadium, they did launch a new app where you can actually order food directly delivered to your seats. I happened to try and load that up to check it out in the afternoon leading up to the game, and promptly discovered that Toyota Field was not labeled as Toyota Field, as the email that went out to season ticket members said. It was labeled as SAFC Toyota Stadium, and it was actually located off the western coast of Africa, not in Texas, and you could not place orders. So I was trying to help them figure that one out. Hopefully, it seemed like people around me in my seats were actually using the app and having, you know, within 5 to 10 minutes of their order, their stuff was showing up. So, I mean, cool addition to the apps at the SAFC games. I think that's great that we have those new kind of things going on.
I like the mental picture of the Spurs coyote in a rowboat with some nachos in his lap trying to deliver those to the west coast of Africa because somebody ordered.
It's great. Like, and it was in the ocean. Like, the pin was dropped in the middle of the ocean off the western coast of Africa. It wasn't anywhere close at all. But yeah, there were a few people that were mentioning on Twitter that they were having problems with the app. Hopefully, you know, contact your season ticket member rep and figure it out, because it seemed to work good for me. And I am on iPhone, if that makes a difference. I don't know if these are Android-specific problems with these apps.
Yeah, what's your general thought about teams and stadiums that are moving towards digital only and no cash and some of these other sorts of technology-driven things? Because I believe it was Atlanta at Mercedes-Benz where they're not accepting cash at all anymore, and you can buy like a card. And it's basically a gift card that you can only use at the stadium. I need to fact check that. I think there's more to that. I know there are multiple stadiums that are doing that, but I don't want to call out Atlanta for that. But what do you think about kind of that digital only movement that seems to be happening?
I'm okay with it for the tickets. And it seems, like I said, I didn't have issues with the app. If I had had issues with it, then I probably wouldn't feel as positive about it. I'm all for the whole, let's use less paper and plastic and save the trees and all that good stuff. So, I mean, if I can do it with my phone like that, as far as buying, like not having cash at all in the stadium, I don't know about that. I don't save my credit card information on my phone. I don't use Apple Pay. I don't trust that, but that's just, I know a lot of people use it. My wife uses it. I know tons of people that use it. I just personally don't trust leaving my credit card information saved in my phone.
Yeah,
where somebody can just like walk by and wirelessly connect and pull my crap out of there.
I hate using cash, man. I hate it. The only thing I hate more than using cash is using change, like coins.
I never have cash on me. Honestly, I never do.
That's the problem. Like, I don't have cash, or like I don't have enough cash, or like it's such a pain, man. So I'm all for this like push to digital. I share your same paranoia of like, well, somebody's going to steal my stuff, but I'm just like naively hoping that it's secure enough to not have to worry about anything like that.
As long as I have a physical card to use, I'm good. If they force me to using my phone, I'm going to be panicked all the time, I'm sure.
Yeah, I just hope that Toyota Field and other stadiums kind of are able to upgrade their Wi-Fi at some point. I feel like it's 2019. You should be able to, you know, stream other USL games on your phone while you're watching the one in front of you, because none of us can pay attention to one thing for an hour and a half, let's be honest. Anything else about the Phoenix game for San Antonio FC that you want to talk about before we move on?
I think we have to mention the Oscars award that Solomon Asante, you know, got for his flop in there during the game. On top of his absolutely stellar through ball for that goal, that temper tantrum he threw was like straight out of being a 5-year-old. Holy crap. It was bad, really bad. And I know that, you know, we had a little bit of flopping on our side too, but nothing like that. That was just way over the top. Holy crap.
I try not to like criticize players going down and that kind of stuff until, what gets me is the roll. Anytime that players are rolling across the field, that instantly like their leg could be like 20 feet away from them as they roll away, like completely detached. And I'd still be like, oh, he's faking it. He's rolling. So that's like an instant sympathy killer for me, is if they're flopping around crazy like that. And I got a good kick out of San Antonio FC kind of throwing a little shade that way by posting a GIF of him rolling along the field as a response to something like that Monday feeling or something like that earlier in the week. I got a little kick out of that.
If you go down and you go straight for the ankle that is supposedly hurt, okay, I get you. You know, maybe it's all real and good. But when you roll back and forth three times before you even go to touch the supposedly injured part of your leg, yeah, come on. You're just selling it to sell it.
Yeah.
I don't know. We had to say something. It was too big. And I, shout out to the crowd that night for booing Solomon Asante for every time he touched the ball the rest of the evening.
That's one thing I love about those San Antonio soccer crowds is they might not know the name of the player, but if someone's trying to pull some crap, they will zero in on that player for the entire game. I'll yep. never forget the one. I can't remember the player's name, but I remember it was Orange County. A player kind of pushed Coach Powell out of the way a little bit to try to get to a ball, or he was being a jerk, but the crowd let him have that for the entire rest of the match, and it's impressive. I genuinely respect the level of resentment that fans can hold for the rest of the game when it so fits.
And finally, there is one more thing I do have to say, and I said it on my Twitter when I first got to the game. Shout out to the grounds crew this year at Toyota Field. They did an absolutely phenomenal job with that field. It looks better than it ever has right now.
Yeah,
that thing is ready to go.
For sure. It looks great. And hopefully as the summer heats up, it'll keep it up. Another little interesting thing talking about the stadium is they actually filmed the game from the opposite side this time. I don't know if they're going to keep that up for the whole season. I assume so. But it was a trip to see that from the mirrored side, from that east side of the stadium. And it looked fine. You know, there were issues, but there's always going to be issues the first match of a season. The interesting thing is that my understanding of it was that it was an infrastructure issue that prevented filming from that side, because obviously it would be visually the better side to film towards, because the west side tends to be more full because of the sun keeping the east side away for the early parts of the matches. And then also the SAFC across the seats and all that. But my understanding was that it was technically not possible in previous years. So to be able to do that now, that makes it seem like they are improving the stadium, which I don't see how you could take that as a bad sign, especially given the MLS to Austin news that San Antonio got over this offseason and some of the other things that have kind of brought out the detractors for San Antonio soccer. So it seems like upgrading the stadium seems like a good thing.
Absolutely. If they're going to put money into that stadium, that's just more long-term investment. And I can't imagine it was easy to get all the proper lineage run all the way around to the other side of the field, because it's all been based out of that press box area for so long now.
Yeah, and, you know, for a while they've had cameras on the north end too. And really, if you watch other USL games, especially if you're looking at some of the lesser quality stadiums, San Antonio has one of the better broadcasts, and mm-hmm. that's appreciated for sure.
I will say, why watching replays flipped now on the boards, I was my mind was completely blown. I'm so used to watching it a certain way, and then it was backwards, and it was messing with my brain.
I'm trying to figure out how many guys I need to rope in to get "Ref, you suck" on our chests, body painted, so in the press box, so that we can pull that up and it be on camera. But don't tell anybody; it's a secret. I wouldn't actually do that. Let's be honest.
I mean, if we put it out there into the universe, the Twitter universe here, there might be some folks that make it happen sitting in that side.
So the next opportunity they will have to do that is Saturday against Portland Timbers 2. I'm excited to see what this squad can do against what should be more average team in USL West. I think Phoenix is in contention for top three in the West. So facing Portland will kind of give us a better indicator of what the rest of the season is going to be like, I think.
Well, I mean, Portland is coming off of a tie game against Tulsa. Yeah, I don't know what to expect, it, but you're right. It should be more mediocre, middle-of-the-table type play. So we'll see what it ends up looking like. But I'm excited for the game this weekend.
So keeping it in soccer, we're going to move down to one of our favorite cities outside of Texas. Larry's repping it on his shirt right now, as usual. Good old Miami, Florida. Except not actually Miami, as we found out. Do you want to talk about that news?
They made an announcement today that they are pursuing playing, Inter-Miami FC is pursuing playing their first two seasons in Lockhart Stadium, which is actually the old home of the MLS team Miami Fusion, which was the last MLS team to go through down there. But it's in Fort Lauderdale, so it's a 20, 30-minute drive north of Miami.
It is a worst-case scenario, short of not getting a team at all, in my opinion. I cannot believe that this is what it's come down to. Like, I get that they want to get the team on the field and start generating revenue and, you know, end some of the meme of Miami being delayed forever, but this is exactly what they wanted to avoid, and this is exactly what they said would not happen. They said a team in Miami would play in Miami in the urban core, and now they're heading out to Fort Lauderdale, and that sucks for MLS. It sucks for Miami. You got to hope that it's just not another NYCFC situation where they're stuck searching for a stadium for 5 years, and hopefully they can get it done quickly.
I mean, Freedom Park has always been a rough sell because the city council down there, we've talked about this before, they were always facing an uphill climb, getting the city council votes they needed to get Freedom Park being built approved. And that case hasn't changed at all. So they are still fighting to get a number of votes to pass through city council to build Freedom Park in Miami. The interesting part about Lockhart is that they're planning to demolish the stadium that's currently there because it's an overgrown piece of crap right now.
It's so bad.
It hasn't been tended since the Miami Fusion left Miami. So it's just a big overgrown weed fest. And they're going to demolish it and build a new 18,000-seat USL stadium is what they're calling it.
It'll be interesting to see, assuming that the MLS team does end up in Miami after that, it'll be interesting to see what happens with that quote-unquote USL stadium. And, you know, will it be a championship side or a League One or League Two? Like, what? There's so much in the air right now, and I love watching things not go to plan. It's very entertaining, but this is just terrible. And the visual, I don't know who decided to have the announcement at the stadium site.
That was a bad call.
That was a terrible call because you had David Beckham and Ori Mas in front of, like you said, this overgrown patch of what used to be turf or what used to be a pitch. There's a lot of pictures of the dilapidated Lockhart Stadium. I didn't think anyone would ever have a friggin' press conference there. My favorite shot was Beckham just looking totally defeated with a half-broken Fort Lauderdale Strikers logo on the broken scoreboard over his shoulder. That just, maybe they were trying to sell it as, look how bad this stadium is, we're going to make it better. Maybe that was their tactic. But what it broadcast to me was, look what we have to resort to. And that's got to be disappointing.
It's pretty sad. And I went back to double check. They're terming it a second tier team in the USL is what they're saying is what's going to play there. So what level that means in the USL, right, if it be championship or League One or whatnot, we don't know yet. But it's also supposed to be home to their academy eventually, down the road. But I mean, they're dropping $60 million to build this stadium. Like, they're making a significant investment here in Fort Lauderdale now, which doesn't necessarily bode well for everything else going forward. That's a lot of money.
And that's assuming everything passes, because my understanding, just reading this Miami Herald article by Michelle Kaufman, is that they still have to get approval from Fort Lauderdale to play there, which is another political roadblock. Like, I feel like half of covering North American soccer is just paying attention to random city council meetings that aren't actually taking place in your city.
I hate that that's what, like, our podcast has come down to. And we did it with Austin over and over and over, staying up till 2-3 in the morning following these city council meetings. And I feel like we're headed down that road again with Miami and Fort Lauderdale. Yeah. I don't think the hoops are nearly there with the Fort Lauderdale situation. It's a rundown eyesore. And if somebody wants to come in and drop $60 million into it, I don't think the Fort Lauderdale City Council is going to blink about that. So I think that'll get approved pretty quickly, especially because the end goal is geared toward youth with the academy. Miami, though, the Miami side with Freedom Park, I still don't know. Yeah. I don't know.
I just think they have to get it right at this point. Like, it's drug on for so long that you can't launch it poorly, or you can't sustain it poorly.
It's already wrong. Like you say, you got to get it right. It's already wrong. It's not launching in the city core of Miami. It's not even in Miami. It's everything that they said it wouldn't be for at least the first two seasons right now.
I'm laughing, but really I'm sad about everything about that market. I kept thinking that it was going to happen the way that we all expected, and kept thinking it was going to get better, and it just continues to find ways to be worse, and it's almost impressive.
I'm really torn now, because I'd said before that I was planning to try to go down for the first game, and now that it's going to be in Fort Lauderdale, and now that it's going to be not in Freedom Park,
and
Freedom Park may not even happen now, so I'm torn about whether I should try to go down or not next year to go catch this home opener down there, because it might actually end up being their permanent home.
Yeah.
If you think of the big scheme of things, like, this may not happen in Miami, which is insane to think about now.
Well, anything else about Miami before we move on? We still like the badge, the colors.
Yep. I still want a jersey. Please, yeah. Send me a jersey. I want at least a magnet for my car. I've actually sent some like Twitter messages trying to get my hands on one, and I know that some of these like supporters groups have them somewhere. I just can't seem to get anybody to reply to me to get one out here to text.
Well, maybe by the time Miami is settled, we will be able to talk about the opening days for St. Louis and Sacramento. Because for those not watching the live stream, Larry just rolled his eyes as far back as possible. Article came out today, or not today, sorry, this week.
Tuesday.
That St. Louis and Sacramento are the first in line for the next two MLS expansion cities.
Straight from Don Garber. Yep. So.
Kudos for at least not playing the game about, like, maybe we'll build it in your city. Like, anything that gets away from this, like, pretend game show that they like to run where they like to give other cities hope. If they're going to do St. Louis and Sacramento, I hope they're just upfront about it and that this is it and it's not drama and we can look past that once we're past it.
Please just announce them already. Like, don't drag this out anymore. This whole process has been long and arduous as it is. Just do it. Just say who it is. Announce the two teams or whatever team, however many teams it may be, and get it over with. Rip that Band-Aid off already, Don Garber.
Yeah. I mean, how do you feel about, maybe a few years ago this would have been different, but in 2019, how do you feel about Sacramento as an MLS city, an MLS team market?
I still believe it when I see it. I mean, that's what else are you gonna do at this point? They were searching for investors, and I still don't even know if they have the money stuff worked out. Probably about time to start looking into that again now that they've kind of popped back up to the top of the list here. I don't know, like, if they were ready years ago, but it's kind of fallen apart since then to a certain extent. So I don't even know where they're at anymore with their their readiness for an expansion team.
I guess I should be more specific in that, like, assuming all the money is there, like it allegedly was before, Sacramento is not the largest city. It's not an international city. It's another city in California, which, like, Texas does have a lot of people in it. Like, it just feels like Sacramento originally got the buzz because of their USL attendance, but Cincinnati kind of became what we all thought Sacramento was going to be. So, like, it doesn't feel like an MLS market to me, I guess is what I'm saying. And sorry to our friends in Sacramento, but it's just, it feels strange. I can't explain it.
I don't know. Do you happen to know off the top of your head how their attendance was this past week for the first week? I'm trying to look it up right now. Did they even have a home game?
Question.
It doesn't look like they did. Who did they play this week? They played.
And I'm not trying to say that attendance is everything, because it's absolutely not. It's just,
it's a big part of it. Like, that's, if people aren't showing up to the games on your opening weekend of USL, they played Salt Lake. Let's see when their first home game is.
So
I'm trying to find it right now.
Yeah, no worries. I feel like the hype around Sacramento is gone, and I feel like Cincinnati got what Sacramento was expected to get. So St. Louis, I totally understand. There's a huge soccer culture there, and even though the USL team doesn't dominate the headlines like the Cardinals or Blues or anything like that, I get it. I get it a little more than Sacramento. So
St. Louis makes sense all day long.
Yeah.
They need a major sport there. St. Louis makes an absolute ton of sense, and I'm sure that that city would embrace them in a heartbeat. So I'm not upset or mad about St. Louis. I get it. Sacramento is a little bit harder sell, but yeah. St. Louis, I understand.
So if all of that goes to fruition, then you'll have Nashville, Miami, Austin, and then possibly St. Louis and Sacramento, or one of the other, because that would be 29.
Yeah, so it's one of the two for the 28 spot.
Yeah, it's St. Louis. Like, let's be real. If it comes down between those two, it's going to be St. Louis, unless the government tells them no again. I don't think that they're going to stop at 28 teams. I've never thought that, even before the Austin stuff came across. It doesn't make sense for them to stop, because the league isn't profitable enough to turn down hundreds of millions of dollars in expansion fees. And the player pool in soccer is so deep that there's, you know, in the NFL, if you had 34, 36 teams, mm-hmm. You know, already at 32, you're looking at some weak teams. That's not the case with soccer. So I don't think we'll ever get up to 40, but maybe 30, 32, maybe
32, even more,
maybe 40. I don't know.
32 is doable. Yeah. But, I mean, soccer needs to continue to grow here in the United States to support that, and some of these cities are going to really have to step up. I think it's possible, but 32 seems like a good number.
So new national team kits coming ahead of the Women's World Cup coming up this summer. God, that cannot come soon enough. I'm excited about that. What do you think about the new kits? Did you get a chance to check them out this week?
I'm pulling them back up again right now just so I can refresh my memory on them. And I still say the same thing that I thought before. They're nice, but they're not exciting. I mean, they're more plain red kits for the most part. And they are nice. They're nice looking. They've got some nice little stuff on them, but it's nothing special. Nothing wow.
The thing that they touted in the press release for the men, anyway, or not press release, sorry, the social media post, was stars and stripes in every stitch. And while that's a nice phrase, looking at them, they just look like plain red shirts unless you look really closely and you can see some detail. I don't understand how you go from the Gold Cup kits a few years ago with the very vibrant blue and red hoops and the dark blue shoulders mm-hmm. with the stars on them, like the America AF kit.
Those gold cup kits were straight fire. They were amazing.
And it's so frustrating because those sold out so quickly and the price on them was ridiculous. They were like $120 or something like that. So there's obvious demand for that, but they still put them in these boring ass red kits. The only thing they did that made it even interesting for all the wrong reasons is they put three stars on the back of the kind of in the shoulder blade area on the men kit. And if that's an homage to the women, then great, but it shouldn't be on the kit. Like, the men haven't earned anything. It's fake stars. It's decoration. Like, that's beyond frustrating.
I don't know. They just don't pop. Like, it's fine. It's another kit. It's not doing anything for me. I'm not going to buy one. Like, I don't know what else to say past that. You know, they're not special. Yeah.
The women's kit, the white one in particular, I'm not sure if the men are going to wear that too. I actually didn't see, but it's a plain white shirt with red and blue bands on the very bottom of the sleeves.
Yeah.
And I get that you have to have two very different color combinations, but come on. Like, it's so boring. I don't understand how this keeps happening every single cycle.
I'm going to say something controversial here. It's time to switch to Adidas.
I would love that.
It's time to switch to Adidas. And even though I hate the cut on Adidas jerseys, they are much more interesting to look at.
Yeah. Unless you are the ones designing it for MLS, who
there you go.
Also have a tendency to just make plain white shirts. But I agree. I'm wearing an Adidas Germany shirt right now. And even though it's a kind of a throwback, it's interesting, at least. It's unique. And I thought Nike was getting on board with that with Tottenham's third kit is green and in silver across the top of the chest. It has the map of North London. And if you don't know that, it just looks like a blob. But at least it's unique and it's interesting. And I thought maybe Nike was coming around. But then we get these same boring kits every time. This, like, you could recycle this conversation from 2017 and 2016, whenever last time we had it.
I hate that we're probably going to continue to have it for the foreseeable future from what we've gotten so far.
Yeah, seems that way.
Maybe we'll get another good kit next Gold Cup.
Maybe. I am not holding my breath on it. Anything else soccer related before we move on for the night?
No, we can keep on pushing ahead here.
So I'm excited, man. I'm sorry. I was immediately transitioning out of that and then went right back. I'm excited for the Women's World Cup is all I was going to say. We'll talk about it a lot more later, but
as it gets closer, it's going to be exciting this year.
Moving over to the Alliance of American Football, San Antonio Commanders topping the Western Conference right now, 3-2, which is also what the San Diego Fleet have at the moment. But I believe they beat them in head-to-head, which is why San Antonio has the tiebreaker.
Correct.
But they are headed into the back end of their season right now. How are you feeling overall about the season so far? Obviously it's a new league, a new team, new everything. Are you enjoying the overall experience so far of following this team?
The games I've been able to catch so far and been able to watch have been fun to watch. You know, it's fun football and it's definitely interesting. And San Antonio has a hell of a team. They really do. I know I think the 3-2 record is a little deceptive. I think they're a little bit better than that record. But it's nice to see them sitting atop the Western Conference right now.
Yeah, I've had a lot of fun with it. And honestly, I didn't have extremely high expectations going into it. But it's been really fun and really interesting and surprisingly decent football. Like, I was worried that it was going to be just, you know, Jacksonville versus Buffalo for every game. Oh, but it really hasn't at all. It's been entertaining, and the rule changes are actually ones that I wouldn't mind seeing in the NFL, as far as the lack of kickoffs and the lack of extra points and everything else. I don't miss those at all. The games feel fast. I hope this team and I hope this league sticks around for the long haul.
Yeah, no, and I think with the support it seems to be getting on the NFL side of things, being on the network and ESPN and things like that, not necessarily on ESPN's app, but I mean, they've been getting coverage across multiple platforms, and I think they're being well supported so far. I see them sticking around for a while, unless they can't make payroll again. So hopefully, as long as they keep bringing in the money, then things will be good here, because I'm excited about the long-term future of football in San Antonio with the Commanders here.
And it seems like they're doing something right, because we got a press release earlier today, I believe, or yesterday, came into my inbox, saying that one of the San Antonio Commanders games is going to be flexed onto the national CBS broadcast, the mothership. And they are also going to show one of the conference championships on the main CBS channel as well, ahead of the national championship, which I think is interesting, because I think that means that it is either hitting the milestones that they thought it would, or maybe even surpassing them. So you got to love that from the TV aspect.
I didn't catch who it was from. Somebody said they didn't realize on the Periscope that the NFL was a part of the AAF. Now, they're not directly connected, but the NFL is embracing having football that doesn't affect their football. And essentially, they're, to a certain extent, using AAF as content for NFL Network. Because really, let's be honest here, unless you've got the combine going on or you've got the draft happening, there's a lot of dead air on the NFL Network and reruns happening all the time. So if they can get live football on the NFL Network, even if it isn't NFL, they're taking advantage of it. And I support it. It's good. It's another venue for me to watch it.
Yeah, I think it's interesting how they're doing that, because it's not quite like a minor league of the NFL, but you can tell that they have a good working relationship, and you know, more power to them. It's working for both sides, it seems like.
Absolutely right now. And maybe it'll turn into a true Division II down the road. It'll be interesting to watch over the next few years what happens with this league, and once the XFL comes into play as well.
Yeah, XFL is being a little more abrasive and challenging the NFL directly, or at least they did in their announcement. God, it feels like 5 years ago now, but really I think it was 18 months or so.
Yeah.
They were directly challenging the NFL and saying, in this league we stand, in this league we, you know, love America and kiss our mamas, or, you know, whatever they said. Like, it was a direct shot at the issues the NFL was having at the time with players kneeling during the national anthem. And the AAF has gone completely opposite of that, of not the opposite of loving America, but the opposite of challenging the NFL. So it seems to be working. One thing that I did find interesting that's happened since the last time we recorded is that Johnny Manziel was released and banned from the Canadian Football League. Yep. And last I heard, we still don't know specifics on why. Maybe that came out last week when I didn't have internet.
So he was unable to fulfill his contractual obligations as they were written. They weren't really specific about what rules he was breaking or not fulfilling, but the Alouettes let him go.
And so because he is a former Texas A&M player, the Alliance team that he's allocated to first is San Antonio. So San Antonio gets the first say over if they want Manziel or not. After that, it goes to who his last pro team was, which was the Alouettes. So whoever has them allocated will get a shot at them if they want him, and if he wants to come to the Alliance, which I'm not really sure what other options he has at this point if he wants to keep playing football. But there was a lot of chatter about, would the Commanders sign him and do they want him? And Logan Woodside, after having some good starts, kind of faltered in the last couple weeks a little bit, was playing a little inconsistently. And then against the Arizona Hotshots, he goes off for 21 completions, 290 yards, and 2 touchdowns, including a longest pass of 57 yards. Yeah. Just a monster first half and a great game from that player. If I can get the audio, I'll tag it on to the end of this episode. But we have audio from Coach Riley, his post-game presser after Arizona. And I loved listening to it earlier because he sounds like he's just having a good time. And somebody mentioned that Logan Woodside set an Alliance record. And even Riley was kind of like, oh, an Alliance record, huh? After all 5 weeks of its existence. And, you know, anyway, I'll tag that on to the end of the episode if I can. But what do you think about the idea of Manziel coming to San Antonio? Do you want him? Do you want to keep what we have already in the city? Where are you standing on that?
I think that it would probably drive butts into the seats. So if they're hurting for attendance here in San Antonio, which so far it doesn't seem like they have been, then yeah, maybe signing Manziel would be a smart move. But there's been some toxicity around him, obviously, in his career from...
No, not him.
Nothing serious, but I mean, getting cut from teams and stuff like that. Yeah, no. I don't necessarily know that it'd be smart because the Commanders seem to have a good thing going right now, and Logan Woodside is playing his ass off.
Yeah,
I want to see him continue to start. That was one of my complaints after the early on in the season was that we were seeing him share time, and I just don't want to see that at all. Like, he needs to be out there all the time. He's the best option for this team right now.
Yeah, I agree. Even if he isn't always the most consistent, we've had this discussion about Dak Prescott before, where I would rather have the player that is going to throw an interception or two each game rather than the one who can only throw it 6 yards in front of him. Yeah. And Woodside has shown the ability to make big plays when they count. And yeah, he's not always the most accurate passer, and occasionally he lets one go a little bit, but he's also winning them games. And I don't know how you take that away from him for what would basically be a publicity stunt. I don't know that Johnny Manziel has shown himself to be that great of a quarterback to warrant kicking off what you already have. We do have audio from, sorry, I don't mean to cut you off.
No, you're fine.
We do have audio from Daryl Johnston from practice today, so you can hear kind of his thoughts on it.
Additions to this late of the year, if you look around what the other teams are doing in the league on the personnel reports every week, there's not a lot of people adding people at this stage. There's some good football players that have come across those lists and haven't been picked up. I think everybody feels very comfortable with where they are right now. We've spent a long time developing the chemistry and the culture of this organization since we started the season, since we came into training camp. These guys have done a fantastic job, what they've created. I'm very impressed by it. It's some of the best I've seen. I've been on very, very good football teams, and I know how important that is. And these guys have done a great job of creating that. So I think everybody around the Alliance is just kind of weighing and waiting. And what does that do? What disruption does that cause your team? Because the biggest thing, you're going to have distractions. You're going to have adversity during the course of the season. The one thing you don't want to have is self-inflicted situations like that. So, you know, once the league does their due diligence, then all of us as franchises out, around the country have to do our due diligence.
I love that he referred to it as self-inflicted situations, which I think is a great way to describe adding Johnny Manziel to your team.
It would definitely change the locker room environment there, and I don't necessarily think it would be in a positive way. And you don't want to shoot yourself in the foot midway through being the top of the Western table in a season that is short. I mean, we are halfway through the season right now. Is this the time to add Johnny Manziel? Probably not. Give him a run in the offseason? Okay. Going into the next year? Yeah, I mean, you can take a look at him and see if he's any better. Who knows if Logan Woodside will get a look and, you know, get a call up somewhere or something. Evaluate your options then. But right now, it just does not seem like the smart play.
Fully agreed. And going back to the Twitter comment from Max earlier, he said, Commanders are looking pretty good. Hopefully make the playoffs. Going to the game I went to with 29,700 attendance was unreal. It was so loud. I never thought I'd see the day where the Alamo Dome was like the CenturyLink Field, like the Seattle Sounders, the, you know, the intimidating home field advantage in football.
Right. In
the Alamo Dome, that's huge.
Yeah, no, and it's crazy that 30,000 people are showing up, and I hope they keep coming out and that they have that sort of attendance for the rest of the year. I'm actually sitting here while we're doing this and looking at tickets right now for another to go to a Commander. They're running some pretty good deals. They got three games for $30. Go sit in the end zone and get all the rest of the home games.
Yeah, that's not bad.
I will take that compared to some of the tickets I looked at earlier in the season when I was like, oh my God, it's $150 to go sit on the 30-yard line or something like that. That was a little excessive, but.
Yeah, well, they hopefully are also a little more prepared this time than week one where they ran out of concessions. It sounded like week two went a little better. Well, they weren't expecting the huge turnout, so it's a good problem.
I went the last time that Metallica came through San Antonio. They ran out of beer.
I remember that.
It's a Metallica show. How do you not plan it? Like, it's not like, oh, we didn't think that the Alamo Dome was going to be packed to capacity and we were going to run out of beer. It's a Metallica show, and yeah, we're going to be at full house. Double the beer order. They can't plan for anything, even when they know what they're getting themselves into.
Right. San Antonio loves their beer, and I'm not sure how we keep running out of it. I mean, I know how we keep running out of it, but you know what I mean.
I mean, now they've got Commander's beer, so hopefully they can at least keep that in stock all the time. You know, running out of popcorn and stuff like that's one thing, but yeah, don't run out of Commander's beer if you're at a Commander's game.
I love that they do that, man. That shuttle from Alamo Beer Company to the Alamo Dome and back, that's genius. I know with San Antonio FC being part of Spurs Sports Center Entertainment, there's a lot of other corporate deals that they have to work with, but I would love to see something like that get worked out with a local bar.
Absolutely.
And Max says something that we actually didn't mention earlier. He says the Alamo Dome could use some fan-friendly pricing. And I agree. It's 2019. Like, San Antonio FC is doing it with most of their concessions at this point. They dropped a lot of the prices. If the NFL can do it, if MLS can do it, you know, in Atlanta, I saw...
Atlanta's off the charts. Like, they are setting the standard here now.
I saw the Texas Rangers have, what is it, a 2-pound chicken tender or something like that. It's like the foul pole. It runs you $20-something for that. And I get that that's like a novelty item, but, you know, it's time to like bring it down a little bit. Don't make me sneak beers in and stuff. I would ever do that.
Yeah. Use that media pass to use, right? And just
No. let's not start that rumor. No,
it's not a rumor. You don't do that. No one does that.
Well, I wouldn't say no one, but that's for another day. Anything else you want to talk about tonight before we call it a night?
No, I think we're good. I mean, we made it through an hour of our brand new podcast doing it right.
We did it.
With only minor technical difficulties.
Yeah, so like we said, the plan is to go Thursdays and Mondays from now on as long as we can. Mondays will maybe not always happen, but Thursdays for sure will. And it'll be earlier in the night, hopefully 8 or 9 p.m. We'll let you know on social media at POGPOD, at POGPOD on Twitter, at Kyle_Mankey, and at LarryLeathers87 also on Twitter. You can hit us up and get all the info you need. But yeah, we're going to try to do this more often and make it feel more like a local radio show talking about sports you care about. So I'm sure we'll talk a little Spurs here coming up. Not tonight, obviously. I'm tired. I don't want to go to bed. But,
I'm going to go pass out right now. I'm going to go take some more cough medicine and be on my merry way.
Last question. Who does better this year, New York Jets, Cleveland Browns?
Oh. The Cleveland Browns might go all the way to the Super Bowl, and I can't believe I'm saying that right now. That team is dangerous on paper. Holy Jesus, with all that action, man. Yeah. The Jets are still just Le'Veon Bell. I'm still not sold on Sam Darnold personally, but and I also hope that the Jets crash and burn every day of the week, so there's that too.
Yes, you are wearing a Miami shirt, as a Miami Dolphins shirt specifically as we speak.
Hashtag tank for Tua. That's what we're doing down there in Miami right now.
Yeah, man. Well, we're going to tank for Ben for tonight, but thank you again so much for listening. You can check out more content on calledoffside.com. We will catch you on Monday. Have a good weekend.
Well, how about that? You never know in this game, and that was a pretty good example of what can happen when a team gets hot like they did and moves the ball and scores and gets the ball back again, and it was pretty crazy. But I was really, really proud of our team. I think coming here, this is our third game in a row on the road, which, I thought we came out really well tonight, came out hot and got a good lead. And I just think our guys came ready to play, and it was a good win for the Commanders.
Coach, although you're going to need some low adjustments coming in for the second half, you did show what your offense is able to do in the first quarter. 26 points, the most in a single half in Alliance history. Can you talk about what you've seen for them in practice?
Most in Alliance history?
Most in Alliance history.
That is crazy.
Yeah. So can you talk just a little bit about
all
what you saw for them?
All 5 weeks of it?
All 5 weeks of it. I know.